This is Purple Radio on demand.
Welcome to Stop Podcasts.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back. What are we talking about today, everyone?
Kazoos!
I really, really hope that doesn't sound terrible.
No, it's going to sound awful.
As someone who wasn't kazooing and just laughing for most of it, so technically an outside observer, that was awful.
Yeah, that might need, like, bringing down a little bit in the edit, just so we don't destroy anybody's ears.
I think we should leave it.
The Christmas spirit is with us today.
That was pretty good. That was Carol of the Bells.
Thank you. Louis was doing it earlier.
Yes, so...
No! He's going to consume over you if we don't like what you're saying.
This is how we've had out the length of this podcast.
I'm going to have the last kazoo on this podcast. The last kazoo.
We just all role playing as
Joseph Booker. Is that just the last post but with a kazoo?
So we'll be talking about two episodes, Ghostlight and A Christmas Carol. Why? Because they're about ghosts and we're in a spooky mood. It's not Halloween though. I'm very sorry.
Ghosts are fairly Christmassy.
Yeah. They used to be. You know, like Victorian era and that sort of stuff.
I mean, The Christmas Carol is sort of the thing you think of when someone says ghosts at Christmas.
Yeah.
I think of The Unquiet Dead.
Everybody's looking at Louis.
I mean, that wasn't even set at Christmas, was it?
It was.
I think it was.
It was.
I think it was.
That was the whole thing.
But also, that's Charles Dickens and, like, vaguely themed around A Christmas Carol in some sense.
How meta. How meta. So, let's talk about... shot time.
Oh, you're doing that now?
Maybe we could kazoo every time Harry facepalms.
Yeah, but you're the one who makes them facepalm. You okay, Harry? Do you need welfare?
Yeah.
I'll put Louis on the spreadsheet, don't worry.
Thanks.
I was going to say this podcast has gone off track very quickly, but it literally started off track.
How much of this will be edited out, do you think?
None of it. It's too funny. I mean, Louis's in charge of the edit, so I don't know.
I'll see what I can do. So let's talk about Ghostlight. Now, when it comes to Ghostlight, no one really knows what's going on. In fact, I have Ollie's lovely description here, taken from TARDIS Wiki. The Doctor brings Ace to Gabriel Chase, an old house that she once burnt down in her hometown of Perivale. However, trying to get Ace to accept her guilt is not the real reason the Doctor came here. A mysterious and highly mentally unstable being slays below them.
Be gay, do crime is the moral of the story.
I still don't understand that description.
Yeah, I put in the email, like, I don't know what the description meant by that, but we'll find out together when we watch it, and I don't think we ever did.
The story is notorious for its lack of cohesion. No one knows what's going on until sort of the very end where they try to make sense of it, but it's not earned at all.
So Esther McCoy's episodes are generally like that, but this is much worse than most. This is, I think, the worst I've seen. Not the worst McCoy story, but the worst in terms of being confusing.
Mm. I've managed to pull together what I think is a breakdown of what actually goes on. This is from people like Christian on the last Ghostlight podcast where... I mean, we probably should say spoilers, but there isn't really much to spoil.
Because we don't know.
We don't know what's going
on. We can't spoil anything if we don't know. But yeah, theoretically, spoilers for Ghostlight, A Christmas Carol, and Doctor Who in general.
Possibly also
The Star Beast, because we have also watched that.
We watched it fairly recently, but we're also going, after this, we're going to record a Star Beast podcast, which we will release first.
We believe all of it. Yeah, so I've got this from Christian and the web and like stuff that I could find online. Okay, so the Doctor takes Ace to a haunted house that serves well, sorry, that holds servants and bug people. Ace has previously been to the house in 1983, which he burned down. Control serves light. Light, which, not actually in the story, but supposedly is an eternal, travels at the speed of thought, tries to catalogue all of life, and went for a nap. Survey is his survey, and he's now known as Josiah Smith, starting to gain independence and growing into the dominant life form on Earth. In particular, in this time period, the dominant life form is a Victorian gentleman. Survey locked Control away. Survey tries to kill Queen Victoria to take over the Empire using Redvers because, well, the British Empire was at its height in that time period, so if you kill the Queen, then you become the dominant life form everywhere. That's Survey's logic.
That's definitely how that works.
Indeed. Redvers instead sides with Control, and they go off with Nimrod, who's their Neanderthal servant, on a journey through space. Maybe not time, but
I think
space.
I missed something. Why was there a Neanderthal there?
He escaped or was released from the catalogue.
Right. Yeah, and Light wanted to catalogue every life form.
Yes. Light, who has awakened, is angered at evolution, wants to turn everything back to primordial soup. But when the Doctor says, hey, Light, you've changed, Light just disappears to stop themselves changing anymore.
He just sort of freezes there, really confused for like 20 minutes while the rest of the plot happens.
Did Light not realise that cause and effect was a thing?
I don't think Light accepted the passage of time, which for Light is actually kind of...
Yeah, that's quite apt if you know the physics of how Light works. Because actual Light doesn't experience...
I don't understand why the cataloger is called Light. Surely it should be the cataloger, or the logger, or the librarian,
then
or
it would,
the
then it would have been called Ghost Bookkeeper.
I don't even know why it's called Ghostlight, because Ghostlight is something supposedly on a theatre that when it's all dark, you leave a light shining in the middle so people probably can know where they're going.
There's a ghostly guy called Light.
Yeah.
A ghostly guy called Light, yeah. And that's it. There really, really isn't that much in the story. But the stories behind it, I'd argue, are fascinating. So, in particular, this was supposed to be what we now know as Lungbarrow. So Lungbarrow is the Doctor's ancestral home, and this story would have explored the Doctor's past. But, of course, producers, particularly J&T, felt it revealed a bit too much about the Doctor. So let's... Hopefully we won't be discussing the Doctor's past anymore. The idea of the old House of Secrets was kept, so Lungbarrow was actually made. And you can see the remnants of it in this story, because it's a House of Secrets, but instead of focusing on the Doctor, it focuses on Ace and what Ace did. But it gets even more complicated, because this was actually supposed to be in between Curse of Fenric and Survival. Because in Curse of Fenric, there's a line about Ace saying, oh, I remembered an evil old house that I went to, it was haunted. But if you watch it in order, she goes to the house and then reminisces about the time of the house.
Well, they changed the order on release. I knew they did that with some McCoy episodes. Mm. I didn't realise this was one of them.
I mean, there's machinations with the Doctor. Maybe you could say, well, it's not really a linear thing. You could watch it in any order you wanted, but the story's still a mess.
Yeah, I mean, the McCoy era ended up being a slight mess from, like... I mean, like, they were trying to do the Cartmel master plan of having the Doctor be, like, the founder of Gallifrey and big, important backstory. Chibnall decided that was actually a good idea for some reason. Part of me's glad Doctor Who was cancelled before they could do that, because I think that would have been bad for the same reason the Timeless Children is bad, in my opinion. Different people have different reasons for disliking the Timeless Children, but... Yeah, so, but I don't know how much that feeds into this story in particular, because I don't know what happens in this story.
This does a lot what other McCoy stories does, and that has, one, too many ideas in too little of a space, and two, the Doctor clearly sort of knowing what's going on, but not really revealing what he knows. I could compare it to Silver Nemesis. Silver Nemesis, the same thing of, it's very short, but there's so much going on, and the Doctor clearly is trying to be evil, manipulating people for a just end. But at least with that one, you can actually understand what's going on. Whereas this, stuff just happens. It just happens.
I think it's like, almost ironically, I feel like my favourite classic Doctor is probably Sylvester McCoy. It's a close one, but I would say Sylvester McCoy, but he definitely doesn't have my favourite episodes. Like, Sylvester McCoy, I love Remembrance of the Daleks and a couple of others, But it's definitely not my favourite era of Classic Who. But I do think he's my favourite Doctor, and I love his sort of slightly whimsical nature. I love his silliness that's then balanced with something that wasn't really present in Classic Who as much, was like the darkness and the sort of dark, morally questionable, manipulative side of the Doctor. You don't see it much in Classic Who, but you see it a little bit in the McCoy era. I suppose very silly on the surface, but darker underneath matches my favourite Doctor, Matt Smith, so there's probably some reason that I'd like both of those. And also, our Doctor Evie Press is a lot like that.
10 minutes. We did it for 10 minutes.
We've been talking... let's be honest, we've been kazooing for probably a lot of that time.
There was a lot of kazoo.
Indeed. McCoy quite liked the story. Thank you, Ollie. McCoy quite liked the story.
I don't think all of us are making it out of the podcast studio today. I don't know who's not coming out, but...
Maybe we should have watched a different story.
It's just so nonsensical.
I don't know what happened. Like, was I physically in Who's Sock watching it? Yeah, like I was there. Nothing.
I blame Louis for this. He's the only one of us who'd seen it before.
You were the one who put it on the schedule.
Well, we all had a say, but none of us knew how confusing it would be.
Calm down, the lion.
Calling Ollie a lion?
I don't know. I don't know who I was comparing to a lion.
Raw.
Oh, no. No! Leave the cat girl era. Leave the cat girl era.
So, survival, which is another McCoy story, is about cat people.
can we have a cat boy week?
No.
Is that a term? Is that what we're doing?
Could we pair survival with New Earth?
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if a Who-Sock exec do that one day. Dog Week, what would that be?
One of the episodes of Flux.
Flux.
You have the Happiness Patrol, because there's that little Fifi thing.
Oh. The Happiness Patrol and the Halloween
Apocalypse. Oh, K-9. Maybe some of the K-9.
School reunion. Anyway, wait. There's so little to talk about with Ghostlight. We've started speculating about future weeks and Catboy week and Dog Boy week. What have we become?
You can tell this is Durham's number one funniest podcast.
So let's move on to a Christmas Carol. Honestly, man, I've had enough. Amy and Rory are on their honeymoon and end up being trapped on a crashing spaceship over Sardic Town. Khazran Sardic controls the skies with his father's machine. He can save everyone, but he chooses not to. Why? Because he just doesn't care. Until a mysterious man turns up and begins to unravel his past. So what do we think of this story? Did it make sense?
Sorry, did you say a crashing space sick?
I think you did.
I'm a very space sick man myself.
I love the episode. I think it's brilliant. Like, the time travel is maybe not 100% consistent in making sense, but it's consistent enough that, and it serves the plot in an important enough way that I don't think it significantly detracts from the episode. And
it's an episode that uses time travel other than as a device to get the characters where they need to be at the start.
Mm. Which some people think that's all time travel should be in Doctor Who, which is valid, but I love when they play with time, and I think... You know, sometimes in an episode like Eve of the Daleks, it makes no sense and completely ruins the whole story because you don't know what the stakes are, you don't know anything. Whereas in this episode, there's some holes in the mechanics when you really think about it, but I think it's worth it for making a beautiful episode, which I think this really is.
I agree. I quite liked this story, mainly because it's the whole thing of you see the older Khazran, the younger Khazran, and how... being involved with the Doctor's life changes them. But I also quite like the whole thing of the unintended consequences, that the Doctor tried just as hard as he can, but of course he didn't know that the solution... Abigail was sick. And it's very bittersweet, I'd say, particularly the ending where, you know, that, okay, we can save the day, but the inevitable must happen. And I'll applaud Moffat for that, because he can write those bittersweet moments, and I think this is a perfect example of that.
I think it's very good for I forgot what I was going to say. Sorry.
I really like the fact that the Doctor doesn't save everybody, which is you know, when you've got a magical man in a box, sometimes you're like, oh, like there's always that bit of me when
everybody lives
just this once. Like, he's got a time travel machine. He can fix stuff, but she dies and he has to let her die as well. Like, he has to make that choice, which is very interesting, and I really like when they do that in Doctor Who.
And I think having those moral questions makes it so much more interesting. And I like that it doesn't linger on it for very long, but it does briefly meditate on, like, the power the Doctor has over Kazran's life, and is it ethical for him to do that? And Kazran questions that in a very valid way, and it doesn't episode doesn't address it fully, and I don't think it needs to, because it would detract from other plot points, but I like that it is.
Do you think that, I mean, I know, jumping straight to a question here, which I mean, no, I haven't written down, could this probably be explored in another way? Let's say there's a season arc where it's just the story of the Doctor not exactly manipulating someone's life, but deliberately changing their life over time, and that leads into a big finale of, oh my god, you've disrupted the timeline in a way that made me a different person. I really did like that idea, because it's a way of dealing with time.
It's an interesting idea.
Way, yeah.
And again, it's the Doctor being quite dark and manipulative in a way that we don't realise is dark, and he doesn't think is dark, he's just trying to do something nice.
Yeah, it's especially because he makes Kazran more bitter?
In a sense, yeah. He goes from just not really caring and having some emotional trauma to being completely heartbroken and just sad.
I like the part where he was always turning to the portrait, where essentially you saw his father and then Abigail and then his father again. And it sort of shows that, you know, sometimes, Doctor, you can't just go back in time and hope for the best. There's going to be those consequences. I think as well, I quite enjoyed the thing with the fish. I know it probably seemed a bit strange at the start, but supposedly I think Moffat used his own childhood fears of like flying fish and sharks in this story, and I think it works. It's completely, it comes out of nowhere, I'd say. Like the fish in the clouds.
I love it.
I think it's quite good.
I think it's such a beautiful, like, Doctor Who, one of the things that it thrives on is beautiful, amazing worlds and concepts and ideas. And I think this is one of those. I love his wonder when he sees the fish for the first time and he goes, I love new planets. And it's one of my favorite things about this episode is just the whimsical way the Doctor's dialogue is written. It's Matt Smith at his most fun and silly and whimsical and delightful.
I agree. You can definitely see the fantastical, hopeful nature of the Doctor here. Even though, yes, he is very manipulative towards Kazran, but ends justify the means. Is that what?
In some sense, I suppose what the morality is in the end, okay, he does lose Abigail, but Kazran is probably a lot happier and save 4,003 people. But it's in some sense, it's not as simple as that. Should he have that power?
I also quite enjoyed the fact that, yes, this is called A Christmas Carol, but it's not just Doctor Who does A Christmas Carol. Probably because, one, as I think I said before, The Unquiet Dead kind of did the whole Ghosts at Christmas. But this was quite good in making more of an updated, modern approach. You've got holograms. They're your ghosts.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed that.
I love the fact that the Ghost of Christmas Future is him, himself, being shown to young Kazran.
Yeah, and I think that's absolute genius. A way of subverting what we expect, and a way of subverting what we think Ghost of Christmas Future means.
Yeah, I was sort of expecting, oh, they just bring Kazran into the future and show like a desolate wasteland and then people really hating him and go, oh, look how everyone hates you. But that's basically what happens.
They already hate him.
So the funny thing is, great, yeah.
Ultimately, what it is, it's just going and changing his past again.
Yeah, but I think
technically that's what it is, but it doesn't bother me.
The payoff was great when you actually see the old person looking at their past self and seeing that, right, I think I have to change.
And especially because he very nearly does to himself what his father did to him. And the fact that he's being played by the same actor as his father.
The young one thinks that is his dad.
He looks like his father, right?
And he realizes that he's almost become the thing that he hates the most.
Especially when little version of him calls him dad as well.
Yeah.
Which is like probably his biggest fear is turning into his dad. So by having, like, being confronted by that by himself was such like a heavy moment.
Yeah. Obviously the whole thing where the doctor realized his dad, it's very Sherlock. It's probably the... Moffat does Sherlocky things in his era quite a lot, but I think this is probably the case where it's most true. I don't mind it.
There was literally a few seconds where the camera started shaking, the doctor started talking quickly, and I'm like, please, Moffat, stop.
I like it. I think it's fun. I enjoy it.
Another somewhat overused trope that came up a lot in this episode is the 11th Doctor's theme. And I don't dislike it. Yeah, I don't dislike it. It's just when you're aware of how often it gets used, you do notice that it gets used a lot.
Yeah.
And this is after the first series of Matt Smith. So if it's this early on.
We're watching a few Matt Smith episodes next term. Spoilers. and
Ollie leaking the schedule.
I'm sorry. Like, again. I'm just saying, look out for those episodes and look out for I'm the Doctor in those episodes, because it comes up a lot.
Who Stopped Drinking Game?
That's
probably not a good idea.
Comes on. And yeah, but I don't, it doesn't bother me. Like, I think technically it's bad, like, soundtrack practice, but I love I Am the Doctor, and it makes it's made it so iconic and so ingrained in me and so ingrained in the show, to the point where it's almost like transcended Matt Smith, because it was used in The Star Beast. They had like a remix version of it used in The Star Beast, and it was also used in Twice Upon a Time.
Well, and I mean, Twice Upon a Time was just a hodgepodge of...
Yes, no, that's true. Yeah, Twice Upon a Time is maybe not the best example. But, like, the fact that they're used in The Star Beast either hints Matt Smith's going to return. To be fair, by the time this podcast is released, there's a chance we will know if he's returned, or it'll probably be released before the giggle. But, yeah, in any case, I do love I Am the Doctor, and I just love hearing it come on. Like, you know, when Kazran was going to the drawer to get the screwdriver, and it's like a slightly emotional scene, and I'm just bopping in my chair to I Am the Doctor.
If the Doctor hadn't been there waiting at the window, would he have used it?
Or
was it the fact that the Doctor had, like, preempted it that sort of annoyed him?
That's what I thought, yeah. So it seemed to me like he was going to use it, and then seeing him there made him go, no, you're entirely interfering in my life, in a sense.
The Doctor has once again accidentally gotten married to someone.
Marilyn Monroe this time.
Waiting for Big Finish to pick that up. I don't see how you accidentally get married. I feel like he could have left.
Yeah.
He could have went and sat in the TARDIS for a bit. He didn't have to go to the chapel. He made several conscious decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's less accidental than the incident with the cocoa.
To be fair, that's just a funny thing.
That was just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I guess that one was kind of meant to be educational.
I think because the Aztecs did value cocoa beans.
Oh, the Aztecs was.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Whether or not it was used as actual proposals, I'm not exactly aware.
But I do think... one thing that's interesting to me, and I didn't realise until we were watching the episode yesterday, was that the trope Moffat uses a lot of the Doctor meeting someone as a child and then as an adult. We see it in The Girl in the Fireplace, we see it in The 11th Hour, and we see it here as well. But obviously, like, a lot of the time, that then leads to some sort of romance or slightly uncomfortable implication between the Doctor and this child he's met. And in this, there's no romance between the Doctor and Kazran, but there is implied romance between, well, impl- lie, they literally snog. There's romance between Kazran and Abigail, who it's almost like it's like she saw him as a kid and then as an adult, and it's a little bit weird, Moffat.
Because up until the last time, well, the second to last time she's woken up, every time the first thing she says is doctor, and then the last time when he's slightly older, she says his name.
Mm. Yeah.
You want to get therapy challenge? Like, it is very strange.
Mm. He just really likes a time traveler's wife. I mean, he did literally make an adaptation of it for TV. So. Yeah. But yeah, it's funny because I feel like I wouldn't, like, it's odd, but if it was just one off in this episode, I'd sort of overlook it. But the fact that he's done it so many times.
Is that more of a
And he also meets River as a kid.
I think that's maybe more of a Moffat thing than a Doctor thing. It just
Oh no, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's a Moffat. It's very much a Moffat thing. It always happens in Moffat written episodes.
And with that spirit of blame, I think we move on to questions. This is probably the earliest questions we've ever done, but
because we didn't talk about Ghost Lights at all. Shall we have a little intersection of kazooing?
What sort of theme should we play?
That was not awful.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I supplied a little bass line.
Yeah, you did. Good. I'm not sure how much of that was actually kazooing from my part, or if it was just me blowing through the kazoo.
I would like Joseph to rate us personally.
Oh no, but he's going to be honest, and it's not going to be good.
It's been like a greatest. Yeah, it's been like greatest show. Him just nothing a big zero,
and then we all die.
We all die.
I'd give us a 3 out of 10. Not a 0.
What in the universe would you choose to catalogue?
A cat and a log.
Cats? Catalogue cats. I love cats.
Yeah, and
me.
Logs. Cats and logs.
I don't want to touch any logs.
It sounds like the Siri beatbox thing.
It's raining cats and logs.
It's got to be something collectible, maybe.
Doctor Who figurines.
Daleks.
I've collected a lot of Pokemon in my years.
Yeah. Is there, I feel like there's a Doctor Who villain who goes, you will be catalogued.
Yes, that's the Jadoon.
The Jadoon, that's it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Jelly cats. I love jelly cats, and if I had the money to be spending on jelly cats.
You can make a jelly catalogue.
You can make a jelly catalogue. Do you two know what jelly cats are?
No.
Nope.
Oh my God, let me get
I just like the concept.
Up.
I don't think it's, I mean, considering this is a podcast.
Yeah, this doesn't work for a podcast.
No,
at
but
all,
it's,
but
for, it's for the people in the room.
It's just, we don't care about you listeners. We're just having a chat. We happen to turn on our microphones.
Google jelly cats. They're a form of teddy bear. I have the little Christmas pudding one. I got it for my birthday.
What on earth?
They're like, look, you get different teddies.
Is that a gingerbread man?
They have loads.
Oh my God.
They have like a meter tall Christmas tree for £50, and I think my life would be good if I bought it. So I would catalogue jelly cats.
I like it.
Good. Sort of like the Beanie Baby collector thing.
Ooh, better than a Beanie Baby, Harry. Whoa.
The next question is, what is your favourite character in Ghostlight?
Control.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you.
She
I mean,
slays.
Yeah. Sure.
I can't remember the names of many of the characters, to be honest. When
the glowy guy.
Josiah, when he showed up again and his dead body was also there, I was really confused who he was. I thought that was just another character that had just shown up.
There was a lot of just like middle-aged men. Sometimes that gets confusing.
It does.
And they've all got very sort of old-fashioned-y sounding names, and I couldn't remember any of them.
Mm. I was going to say Reverend Matthews, because he was sort of relating
the
to
evolution
the whole...
Denier.
The evolution denier, because that's sort of the spirit of the episode and what the episode is probably trying to suggest. But he just gets dumped two-thirds of the way through, so I can't really say he's
perfect. Java. For Python, personally.
Can we cause it? Oh, Harry's just put his head in his hands again.
Yeah, because of the Python joke.
I didn't say that.
No, it wasn't Louis for once. This is,
I actually put a bedrock.
What is your favourite scene in Christmas Carol?
Randomly, I don't know if this is a rogue choice or not. I love the scene where it starts with the working class family talking to Mr. Sardek, and we really see him being awful and him being classist and just like bigoted, and we learn why we hate this character. Then we get Matt Smith comes down the chimney, takes over the rope. He's fun, he's funny, he's whimsical. He makes the kids smile. He mocks Kazran, and like I love the little thing of who's she? Nobody important. In 900 years of time and space, I've never met anybody who wasn't important before. And then he goes back to being funny and silly, and
You really like this episode, don't you?
I do. and then you get like. Then you start getting the more emotional depth with Kazran. You see the trauma of him going to hit the boy and not doing it. And you get the Doctor Little Sherlock moment. And I love it for setting up the conflict of the episode, the characters, and just the Doctor being fun and Matt Smith being my favourite Doctor. I love it.
I quite like the shark Santa scene with them instead of getting reindeer. They've got shark just riding away. Well, we've already got sleighs from below. Now we've got sleigh bells.
Sleighs from above.
With a shark.
I really like the scene with everybody singing on the spaceship, but then like the captain saying, like, we're not gonna tell them. It just cause them to panic. And there's something really eerie. I already find Christmas carols kind of spooky in general. It's very weird everyone singing that well together. Strange. But having it in a life and death situation is, really works.
It's sort of like the band keeping playing on the Titanic as well.
Yeah.
Is that your favourite scene as well, Harry?
I don't know.
There's too many scenes.
It's a whole episode.
Yeah, there's... I think the bit where they visit Abigail's family and have Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve, that bit's quite nice.
It's giving Muppets Christmas Carol.
It really, really is. I think someone in the room said, "Oh, look, it's Tiny Tim." when we got to that bit.
Yeah, it's a wholesome scene. Mm.
We also have a question about what did you think of the twist where Kazran is shown the future, aka his younger self meets his old self. But I think we all agree
it's a superb
twist.
It's a brilliant subversion of expectations and final, very convincing way of going, of changing his character.
And finally, if you could adapt another famous story for Doctor Who, just like we did with A Christmas Carol, what would it be?
I don't quite know. I do think... I do like the story of Macbeth. I feel like there's something you can do with that. I mean, I don't know what. I'm sort of just going off the top of my head. I'm just thinking of, like, classic stories, like oldie-timey stories.
Have they done a Pride and Prejudice? Because I know they had a little bit of... is it the Fourth Doctor coming in out of the lake?
I know what you're referring to.
Yeah. So they've done the Lake Mr. Darcy scene, but have they done actual Pride and Prejudice yet? Or like Emma? Or like a famous Austen? Because I'm an Austen girly through and through.
Have we met Jane Austen in Doctor Who? I don't think
It was referenced by Clara.
Kissed her, I think.
Oh, yeah.
As she should.
Not necessarily, but it seems it's been referenced a bit... So I wouldn't be surprised in future there might be, say, oh, let's do a Pride and Prejudice book. Doctor Who.
Yeah.
it would have to be sort of like all in one place. They could go spacey with it, or they could go back and do it historically, but I think it would be very fun. But they'd have to find a way to put the sci-fi twist in it.
I agree.
I did read Pride, Prejudice and Zombies, and if Pride, Prejudice and Zombies can do it, surely Doctor Who can.
I mean, I feel like it would likely be something a bit like Unicorn and the Wasp, where I don't believe that's necessarily adapting a particular Agatha Christie, but it's an Agatha Christie-style story, but with an alien wasp.
A Christmas Carol isn't really a direct adaptation of the book either.
It takes the concept of
the theme of rich person who's a bit mean.
Yeah. And the past,
very
present,
mean.
Future.
And the past, present, future stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And there's not really any actual ghosts.
Scrooge. No, no.
What about you?
Despite it being Ghost Week.
We tried our best.
I don't know.
We get to see what Harry thinks of classical literature.
I don't know.
you put him on the spot, Louis.
Yeah, I'm not good with questions.
Shall we kazoo?
I don't know.
We'll
if
do
that
countdown.
He's face palming again. It's a prolonged one.
Well, then now all I can think of is The Lion King.
The Lion King is based on Hamlet, so that's...
Yeah, I know, that's where I... That's because Ollie said Macbeth, I thought Hamlet, and then I thought Lion King, and...
Fair enough.
This is how my brain works.
Doctor Who, where they're all lions?
I was thinking the story of Lion King, but not with lions.
So I think Hamlet. It would be good.
Basically just space Hamlet, yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to see more, like, Greek myth adapted to Doctor Who, because we've got Horns of the Nymon. Like, I never remember where the is in that title, but Horns of the Nymon Horns of Nymon there is basically an adaptation of Theseus and the Minotaur that goes bonkers at the end, and I want to see more things like that because I love Greek myth.
Odysseus and Jason and the Argonauts.
Jason Whittaker's got to meet the Argonauts.
I would say, and this is going to sound very strange because of what I said before, but Sherlock Holmes and the Hound of the Baskervilles is one of the most iconic sort of books of the past.
Get Moffat to write Sherlock again.
No. But what I was saying was, it does have that gothic supernatural atmosphere. So maybe just shoving the Doctor in would be a bit funny, and to see what would happen and go.
You could go for the woman in, is it Woman in White? Is the first gothic, one of the first gothic novels.
Ooh. I wouldn't
know. Not 100% sure. I should know. I did English literature. But the Woman in White, I think it was the first detective in, like, English-based literature. It's a really good book. It's very Sherlock-esque before Sherlock. But if you wanted something Sherlock-y, but not actual Sherlock, because I feel like if we let Moffat have Sherlock again, no one will survive. But The Woman in White could be a good one. It for my eight. I did that for the essay that got me into Durham Uni.
Oh.
Woohoo!
Nice one.
Thank you.
That sounds good. And yeah, it'd be nice to read The Woman in White.
She's a bit chunky as a book. Takes you a while. I worded that really
You
weirdly.
Worded that really weird.
The book is long.
And with that, I think we've answered all our questions. Well, thank you very much for listening. We hope you listen to us next time. It's goodbye from me. Goodbye from Bertie.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Ollie. And goodbye from Harry.
Goodbye.
And... All right. And...
Sorry. I'm not actually sorry.
And incidentally, a Merry Christmas to all of you at home.
Purple Radio Podcasts.
Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.